The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
This is Jabba the Pod.
Right, sons, and welcome to Sci-Fi Wire's Jabba the Pod, our weekly Star Wars podcast where we discuss and celebrate the movie, shows, books, comics, games, and everything else from the galaxy far, far away. Every generation is a legend, every legend is a podcast, and this is ours. I am your host, disgraced former Jedi and Force mystic Brian Silliman. Joining me are the greatest co-host in the galaxy, starting with former Force-sensitive Assassin's Guild member turned droids rights activist Caitlin Bush.
Hello there.
And the man who lets us record on his starship, the smuggler with a not-so-secret heart of gold, Captain of the Starbinger, Matt Romano.
Greetings.
Still floating alongside us is Bob the Purrgil. And of course, also here is our protocol droid, Y1RZZ, Human Podcast Relations, also known as Wires.
Oh, hello, sir. I am pleased to report that the Dooku is ready for Captain Romano's excursion, and that the former midwife droid known as Mbop has more or less learned how to pilot the ship, so she is ready to accompany him.
Oh, that's great news. Matt, yeah, Matt's going on a trip.
Yeah, I'm very excited.
Yeah, we're recording earlier than usual this week. It is Wednesday, September 9th, 2020, and that's because Matt's taking the Dooku on a little excursion and will be outside of recording range. But Matt,
he's leaving us.
I'm anticipating, and thankfully, you know, both Caitlin and Wires pretty much know how to fly the Starbinger. So
yeah, at this point, I would hope so.
It'll be fine. It'll be in good hands with them. I'll also be here. But thankfully for you, Mbop is now equipped with emergency recording equipment if the need should arise.
Fantastic.
So she's excited to just go on a long trip with you. She was telling me all about it.
Are you excited to be together with her and her paddles?
I am a little bit. I have to say we've bonded a lot as we've been like putting together the Dooku and like, you know, stripping the interior and adding all the bells and whistles. And, you know, not a bad guy. Droid.
Yeah.
Droid.
Gal. Yeah. Droid. I mean, you guys have gotten close. It's nice to see. It's nice to see blossoming friendships that were once, you know, antagonists turned friends.
Listen, everybody's got a lot of paddles, you know. Take that as
That's just true in life, isn't it?
Everyone's got a lot of paddles.
That's the quote in my calendar for today, I think. Well, the time has come to begin the end. We've finally arrived at season 4 of Star Wars Rebels.
You're rebels, aren't you?
And we're going to discuss the Kark and Criff out of a very important episode, the opening two-parter. But first, time for some news on the march.
News on the march.
And this comes in the form of a big spread in Entertainment Weekly about season 2 of The Mandalorian.
Oh, Mandalorian.
Some little tidbits here and there, not a lot, but some interesting little glimpses and teases, I thought. You both saw this, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Man.
Yeah.
The pictures are absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, they really are. And on Twitter, the Star Wars account posted them with in high def without... they're Entertainment Weekly exclusives, but if you want to say make them your wallpaper on your computer, you don't want that, you know, the watermark on there.
You just want the Yoda baby without the EW watermark, you know.
Exactly. It's like, yeah. No slant to EW, we love your watermark, but I mean, you know, I don't think it's canon.
Do we?
Wow, okay. Amram blaster shot fired. So here's what they revealed. It's still not a trailer, but as Caitlin pointed out last week, and I think you're dead on with this, that I think we're about a month out from October 30th. We can expect something like that.
Yeah.
I think that's a spot on assessment. But we've got quotes, we've got photos, including two covers. Mando is right on the cover of one. And he's got Yoda baby in a little purse. So it looks like, as much as I liked your theory last week, Matt, about Yoda teen, it looks like not yet. So Yoda baby is still very much a Yoda baby. He's in a purse now that looks like he just ripped a bag apart from Old Navy and put Yoda baby in this bag. And then Yoda baby is on the cover, one cover, all by himself. Looks like he's crouching around one of Din Djarin's ammunition caked legs. And it's like, well, that's the one that everyone's going to, they're going to sell some magazines with that one.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's not that you forget how adorable Yoda baby is, but it's, you kind of, and you see a picture, it's like, oh, yeah.
And then you look into those little doe eyes and you just heart just melts.
And I'm like, oh, that's right. Other photos in here, another shot of Mando with the baby, and again, still a baby, and quotes support what, you know, how far this takes place after season one. We got a lovely shot of Cara Dune, in case you've forgotten her. I haven't. We have a shot of, played by Gina Carano, I should add, Greef Karga. Carl Weathers coming back, who's also directing this season. He's got some new clothes. And they look fancy, and the clasp, I don't know about you guys, but the clasp on the cape robe thing is very Count Dooku, isn't it?
Very.
The two big gold buttons and the chain, it's very Count Dooku, in a hopefully a non-Sith way.
Well, I like to think that's just like a fashion staple of the galaxy. Some people wear their cloaks with big, you know, things.
Fancy. It's like a belt buckle, you know.
Yeah, a belt buckle, but for your cape. Yeah.
He maybe passed by Sereno and said, oh, this is, you know, this is the fashion. You know, it's also been some years since Count Dooku was a thing. So it's like, so there's nobody in a bar is going to be, yo, Greef Karga, you better take that off. You look like Count Dooku. And you know what he did. So that's probably not a thing.
Yeah, no good.
A shot of Moff Gideon played by, and here's, we're finally going to do it. I've been especially saying this man's name wrong for a while. So I was wrong.
However. No, however, just be wrong. Just stand there and you're wrong. This and be wrong and get used to it.
But I think the world is wrong, because we recently found out on Mark Maron's podcast, where this actor was a guest, that his name is pronounced Giancarlo Esposito.
Yep.
And
we've been putting the emphasis on the wrong.
We've been saying it wrong. We've just been
everybody's been wrong, though. And it's about time we got it right.
And our producer, and I do listen to that show, but I'm way behind on it. And our producer has been pointing this out for a couple weeks, and I did not believe him because I thought he was pranking, especially the last couple after another prank was played. I'm like, this is an elaborate revenge to you know, for me to say
that
this.
Matt and helped plan.
Yeah, and yeah. I'm like, you never know. I was like, but then he actually recorded it and played it of Giancarlo himself saying it. So I'm like, okay, there's no way around it. So it is, in fact, from the man's own mouth, Giancarlo Esposito. And the way this just, it's like silk coming out of this man's mouth. It's like, is there a cooler guy than him? Probably. I mean,
there's
him, there's me, and then there's everyone else. I mean, let's get right down to it.
Yeah, that's the list. That's the list.
Yeah, it is. Thank you, Matt. It is the list. I'm just going to pretend that was sincere. Anyway, here's Moff Gideon. Just a nice shot of Moff Gideon with his little mustache looking smug. And I got a serious Grand Moff Tarkin 2.0 feel from him. Mm. I'm like, you smug, uppity MF.
I was thinking about this the other day, and I was going to wait till we got into the episodes to bring it up, because it was these episodes specifically that made me think about it. But we're talking about Giancarlo right now, so I'm going to bring it up. Have we discussed the fact that Moff Gideon might be a Mandalorian?
Ooh.
No, I don't think we have.
I do not think we have. That's interesting. That's a very good take.
We've discussed, based on his things, that he could be force sensitive, based on what he said, or some kind of force sensitive.
Yeah.
But we haven't discussed that he could be, one of the Mando Imperial flunkies, that he could have been assigned.
Just like there's so much going on in these couple of episodes that we're going to discuss here in a moment. And there were some shots where, you know, we at this point in the series, we have the Darksaber. So that's popping up a lot. We've got the Mandalorians obviously going on. And I was thinking about how the Darksaber is clearly just a symbol of Mandalorian power. You know, maybe he has it because he is a Mandalorian and he finds value in the power of this Darksaber. I don't know. That's a hot take, and I'm definitely probably not the first person on the internet to have it, but I
Feel like
I feel like you should. There's only one thing left to do, which is sound the alarm.
That's the first hot take that I've had in a while. I'm very happy about it.
There's also, we have another shot of Mando on a speeder, and he's got a jetpack on, so he's not done flying, it looks like. This one I found most interesting, even though it's, on first glance, it's like, okay, big deal. But this was on Twitter. I only saw it later in the night. It's a Tusken Raider on a Bantha. And this leads me to think, and I'm like, well, okay. But then I'm like, no. This actually makes me think, if this is season two, that means either Mando or somebody is going to go back to Tatooine. And that the mysterious, so we could revisit the mysterious figure walking up to the body of Fennec Shand. And this would lend credence to Cobb Vanth appearing in the season, possibly played by Timothy Oliphant, wearing Boba Fett's armor, who is based on Tatooine.
The spurred figure.
Yeah, just the shot of that. It's like, okay, so we're going back to Tatooine would lend, you know, would support all that whole storyline.
Yep.
You'd think, right?
You'd think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's where I head.
And maybe we'll see Amy Sedaris again. Quotes. We got a lot of quotes from Favreau and Filoni on what made season one work. A lot of them we heard in Disney Gallery already, but they're still great. Filoni at one point describes his partnership with Favreau as bringing balance to the Force. And Favreau said this about working with Dave, which I just absolutely loved. He says, I'll come up with ideas, and sometimes Dave will say, you can't do that in Star Wars. Then I'll cite examples from movies or Clone Wars and try to use as justification. I'm like a lawyer talking to a judge. I am to him as he was to George. I don't do anything without Dave's approval. And to his credit, he understands that Star Wars needs to be fun and ever evolving. I just think that's amazing because Favreau, he's, you know, the creator, he's in charge of this. He can do what he wants, but he knows which way his bread is, his toast is buttered. He's not going to, you know, go if he's Filoni
rules.
But also
that's effective leadership too, is listening to the people around you and the people that you've hired to do certain jobs and trusting that they're going to do their jobs well.
Absolutely. I mean, that's partially why I think not, I mean, Favreau is great, but I think he knows when he wants that, you know, that Barton Fink feeling, he goes to, he'll go to Filoni, the guy, George's own Padawan. And if it doesn't pass his test, then he knows it's not going to pass the fans' test. So that's really smart. I thought that was a great quote, and it was not surprising. But I just love that he's out, and there's not a lot of ego there saying something like that. So that's real collaboration, as you said, Caitlin. So I really like.
Well, and it sounds like Favreau is like just happy doing the tech side. Like he knows what he's good at, and he's like, I bet he enjoys Filoni coming to him being like, you have the what and the what and the what. All right, fine. Yeah. I can make that. No problem. Here's a big screen. There you go.
There you go.
Yeah, it's like you can see the joy in Filoni's face just looking at the ship on the volume. It's like, yeah. Okay, this is a whole new world for him. But, you know, when it comes to, well, if you want to back it up with what this did on Mortis or whatever and the Mandos and this and blah, 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 you go to Dave.
Right.
Yeah, that made sense. About the new casting rumors, Gina Carano said, some of them are true, some of them are not true. I thought that was probably the most revealing thing in this whole spread. And I immediately was like, okay, which ones are true, which ones are not? And I was
that's the most revealing thing that anyone has said about any of those.
Yeah, it's the first thing anybody involved has commented at all, to the point where I'm surprised they even let that through. And I was playing, I'm like, well, which ones? I'm like, well, Tamara Morrison and Timothy Oliphant are probably true, as is Katie Sackhoff, but it's the other one that I'm not so sure about. It's like, but you know, whatever. Well, that's another conversation.
I think you're biased too.
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. no question. I'm compromised. Generally they're saying everything is going to get bigger. Bigger, faster, funnier. There will be more storylines to follow with more characters, which I thought was interesting. Pedro Pascal said, we start very directly after the first season, so we're not looking at a time jump here. And Giancarlo Esposito on Moff Gideon says, I want to disarm, when talking about him and the Mando, he says, I want to disarm him mentally as well. Who knows? Maybe there's an opportunity to get him to fight some battles for me. You may think I'm a villain, but I'm trying to harness some energy and some powers for a path that could be best for all. You'll get to see him be somewhat diplomatic and more of a manipulator. And he also says that he'll have some one-on-one time with the child. So That's going to be scary. Just seeing Moff Gideon alone with Yoda Baby is going to be like, don't touch him. But then we forget how formidable Yoda Baby can be. So I think there's interesting. It's interesting you, with your theory, Caitlin, about him possibly being a Mandalorian. I think if there's a Mandalorian, and in this time period, some kind of then connection to the First Order, it's like, so it's the First Order may now have a foothold, kind of, or is trying to get one in Mandalore. Because the Empire is gone. Yeah, it's like, so the Empire is gone. He could have been, he is an Imperial, but he could now, we always heard that Favreau has always said they're going to be planting the seeds of the First Order, and they haven't done that yet. So I'm wondering how they're going to do that. Theoretically, maybe Moff Gideon will be, you know, on three sides or whatever. Something tells me he's going to be on his own side, but who knows? There was a fun bit with George Lucas on set where he said he still, even though he's passed on and everything when he was visiting, he's still heckling Filoni about how many takes and setup he's doing, pushing him to go faster. Still being, you know, very much Obi-Wan to his Anakin. And I thought that was just hilarious. The image, it's like the play, I'm like, right, the sketch writes itself. It's like, you're really going to do another setup? You can just keep going, you know. well, you know, I want to get, anyway. Gina Carano says, if you're a Star Wars fan, you're going to see things you've always wanted to see. And Filoni wraps the whole thing up by saying, you want The Empire Strikes Back to be better than A New Hope.
Yeah.
So it was all very exciting. But I got a couple of hot takes.
Ooh.
So sound it. As much as I think the purse, the satchel, the Yoda baby satchel is adorable. And there's still, you know, who knows if we'll get the Beskar baby Bjorn, but I'm hoping that, we're not done with the floating crib or that Mando might fashion a new one, like a more of a cart, because I've been watching more of the Lone Wolf and Cub movies. I had only seen the first one, but now I'm watching them all. And I'm just going on such a tear with these. And these are, oh my man.
The first one, I haven't watched those in a long time.
Yeah, I'd only seen the first one, and I remember some of the second, and it was obvious. But then I'm watching more. I'm like, oh my god! It's, you can really see just how much they're taking from it in good ways. I mean, and they're just really, really fun movies to watch. And so the interplay with the main character and the kid is incredible, and it totally reminds me of it. But it's just the possibilities here. It's in those movies, the cart, the baby cart, as they call it in English, does a lot of tricks. It has a lot of tricks, and it has weapons that come out of it. And then it keeps on. It's like it turns into a Bond car as the series goes on. It does more and more. So imagine a Beskar baby cart for Yoda Baby that's full of Mando tricks.
That's like, just like Yoda outfitted baby. With like.
Yeah. I don't know where this hot take was going. I'm glad that we're here. I was like, what is this?
Like the Dagoro, Dagoro were like in the cart.
Baby
cart. Yeah.
Baby cart.
We'll push a little switch and like a huge blade will come out of the wheel and slice off someone's leg. So if someone goes to attack this cart and Lone Wolf Ogami is not around, it doesn't matter. They're dead anyway. So it's like you go and attack Yoda Baby. Not only does he have the force, you can just push a little button and whistling birds come out of this Beskar baby cart.
Now I'm just imagining like the scene in season one when Mando is climbing the sand crawler and the Yoda Baby is just following in the baby Bjorn along the way. And like he would just be like throwing weapons at him the entire time.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like stuff like that. And that would be a really on the nose reference to it. But I'm watching this. I'm like, oh, there's so many opportunities. I wonder if they're going to go that way. I kind of want them to, but I'd love to see the armor. It's like his next visit to the armor. It's like, what do you want me to make you this time? It's like, well, we're gonna make
a
list.
He unrolls some like blueprints. He's like, okay,
I've been doing some drawings. Can you make me this? And then Morgan Freeman comes out of the corner. It's like, maybe I can help, Mr. Wayne. anyway, hot take number two. Also based on watching these again, Din Djarin by season's end is gonna have the Darksaber himself.
Yeah, I'm into that too. That's a good one. Especially now, like thinking about Caitlin's hot take, if Moff Gideon is a Mandalorian and it's kind of this like epic battle for who controls the Darksaber, controls all Mandalore. Like, you know, I'm into that.
And
like
not
that
even a way that he wants to control all Mandalore, but I'm like, this man needs a sword.
Yeah,
well, it's true. He gets all the help he can get.
If he's going to go full Ito Ogami,
he
needs a sword, and there's no other sword fit for a Mando in Star Wars.
Well, and then Mando can learn how to use it and then teach Yoda baby how to use his
lightsaber.
And
then Matt's take
and
can
then
come true.
And then you get what you want.
And he can be
we all get what we want. Lucasfilm, we're here for
Jedi
you.
Jedi Order. Yes.
We're all here for you. You're okay, really good. Hurting, I'm sure, but you know, we're here.
I also love the imagery of, obviously we know that Din Djarin is a foundling. And so I would love the idea of a foundling and a quote unquote outsider kind of thing who was accepted into the Mandalorian culture being the one to reunite them, you know, with the Darksaber.
Yeah, and who knows what the thing is with that? It's like if it's, well, a foundling is not of a clan theoretically, so someone that's not of a famous house or clan can't possibly wield the Darksaber. It's like you can't allow that. There could be some uppity, you know, class caste thing with that. It's like, well, if he was in Clan Kreese or Clan Cast or some of these others, then fine. But no, a foundling with the Darksaber uniting us all? Oh, no, I don't think so.
This is a storyline I can get behind here.
No, it's like, I don't agree with it either. It's like, I'm no longer alive at that point, but I don't care.
Okay, the Techno Union does not agree.
I also don't. What, Tambor?
What are you doing here? Get out of here.
That's right, Matt.
Come on.
You thought Mbop was going to be good company. Wat Tambor also going with you.
Whoa. Oh, is this my birthday?
You thought he was dead, but we brought him back. Come on out. Okay. Well, we're going to wrap that up. But all in all, I think we can say, with all this coverage, I think we can safely say one thing. This is the way.
This is the way.
This is the way.
This is the way.
With that, we're going to enter into the wonder that is season 4 of Star Wars Rebels.
You're rebels, aren't you?
Wires, what's on deck?
Oh, as per your orders, we will be devoting the entire discussion to the opening of season 4, Heroes of Mandalore, parts 1 and 2.
Everybody got that?
Got it.
Okay.
Got it.
Now, everything we're going to be discussing is canon, but for big additions, we'll fire off our trusty cannon. If we have hot takes along the way, we'll sound the hot take alarm, and if anything really blew our minds the first time or blew them all over again on rewatch, we will let loose with a seismic mind charge. Now, these episodes can be found on Disney Plus, and since they have been out for a while, we will dispense with the spoiler klaxon, but if you haven't seen them, we do highly recommend that you watch them before listening to this, because after so much disarray, what is there, Caitlin Ambush?
There's a clear order in which you should watch Star Wars Rebels and then listen to our podcast.
That's right, and also happy birthday to me, Werner. It was a few days ago, so yay. I had the birthday party on my magical train, and we went to Walmart and then Target, and it was terrible, but I recommend the Reese's Cups by the registers. Okay, if we're all set, now punch it!
Show me what you have on your Rebels.
Star Wars Rebels Season 4, Heroes of Mandalore, Part 1, Back to Mandalore. And this is, they didn't air this together as one part. This has always been Parts 1 and 2. It's never been like the full Heroes of Mandalore. It's always been separated like this.
It was always like 1 week, and it was 2 weeks.
They released them together at the same time, but it still was Part 1 and Part 2.
It was still two separate episodes.
Yeah, which is bump 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 my birthday, yes. But Verna's not mine. But we're back to Mandalore, and it looks very similar to how it looked when we were there in the Clone Wars. Everything's desolate, you know, dusty gray desert with domes. And to catch us up, just to catch us up on where we left off when we were last here. In the Clone Wars Season 7, Ahsoka Tano, Rex, and the Republic clones had arrived to rescue Mandalore from Maul and his faction, which included Gar Saxon and Rook Cast. They were aided by the Mandalorian loyalists led by former Death Watch members Bo-Katan Kryze and Ursa Wren. Maul was defeated and Gar Saxon captured, and that was the last time we were there. chronologically, but we've learned a lot since. We've learned through Rebels, the Republic very soon after that became the Empire and obviously stayed around because they already now had a handy foothold there. They took over the Mandalorian government. Gar Saxon was made governor and official Imperial flunky. The Protectors were more or less in the middle of all this. An Imperial Academy was created on Mandalore where Sabine of Clan Wren was a student helping to invent new dangerous weapons. She defected and brought disgrace to House Wren. Now, in Rebels, we've seen the Protectors led by Fenn Rau full-on join in the rebellion. Well, they get wiped out, but Fenn Rau is the only one left, and he full-on joins the rebellion. Sabine has recovered the Darksaber from Maul, who is now dead, which is a specific... and we learned also the Darksaber is specifically created by a Mandalorian Jedi named Tara Vizsla that can theoretically unite all of Mandalore, one sword to rule them all. Mando's loyal to the Empire mostly wear white armor, looking like the original, which is, we'd never really talked about this, but it's kind of the exact design of the original Boba Fett design, was right. He was just going to be a fancy stormtrooper.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much their look. So the Mandos loyal to the Empire wear these white armor outfits that are not Beskar. Sabine returned last season and brought Clan Wren back to the light and also took out Gar Saxon. When last we heard, Clan Saxon and Clan Wren were at war over the planet, pretty much Mando loyalists and Mando Imperials fighting for control. Because Sabine and Clan Wren brought help to the Rebels at the end of season 3 in 0 hour, it is now time for the Rebels to return the favor. And they waste no time because we open up right this season on Mandalore. It's like, okay, no talk about
returning
doing
the
it,
favor.
And then let's go to Mandalore. They are in the middle of returning the favor. So we open with Sabine, Ezra, and Chopper watching an Imperial prison. They're looking to rescue Sabine's father, the artist Ulrich Wren, who, if we remember, is still being imprisoned and held hostage by the Empire. He's being moved there from the capital, Sundari, or so we think. So Sundari is still the capital. Kanan is there too, as is Fenn Rau. Ezra has been loaned a jetpack after continually saying that he wanted a jetpack, and he's not very good with it. And in these two episodes we'll be talking about, there's a lot of Ezra jetpack tomfoolery. And Caitlin, I can already see you laughing. What are your thoughts on Ezra and the jetpack?
It brought me so much. I think it, like, the images of him being so bad at this jetpack and making a complete fool of himself brought me, like, the most serotonin that I had all day watching these episodes.
What a weird way to put it.
He looks like such an idiot, and it makes me so happy.
Yeah, I was glad that that he's not immediately brilliant with it.
Yeah.
Because it's like, oh my God, he's a, what can't they? Who is this kid? He immediately takes to a lightsaber. He's got a laser wrist rocket, and he's proficient with a jetpack with no attempts. It's like he's bad at it, and
he's
he stays
really
bad at it.
Thank God. Yeah.
So the assault begins with Sabine standing up over the trench, sparking up the Darksaber, flanked by Clan Wren warriors, and we're off. And I love that image. It's such a powerful way to begin this final season of just Sabine cresting, anybody really cresting a ridge of a trench with the Darksaber, but that it's Sabine.
Yeah.
It's when She's this show so cool. started, it's like, well, it's like cut to 3 seasons later and here we are. So just what a moment. I'm a fan of trench cresting moments in general.
Good. Star Wars has several of them.
Yeah.
There's a lot of trenches.
I think that's probably why I like the No Man's Land sequence so much, because it's a really good sequence, but it's also just, you know, the ultimate trench climbing sequence.
It truly is.
Yeah, and it's like kind of...
is in reference to Wonder Woman.
Wonder Woman.
It's great.
Anyway.
Fantastic soundtrack. Anyway.
Yeah, really good. Really good. Really, really good. Kanan's got moved for days! And he and Rau have a fun camaraderie now. I like that they've gotten close. And Rau calls him a show-off. Kanan doesn't really need a jetpack. He just force jumps around everywhere. And
like,
I'm loving
so
it.
So high.
Yeah.
Like, it's really, like, impressive.
Kanan's powers have got... I mean, it's amazing how far he's grown. And yeah. I feel like you can take away his sight. But again, this is an instance. We talked about this in the very beginning of Mando. It's like, yeah, take away his sight, take away his stuff. You know, he's still Iron Man. Snap. But, you know, he's stripped, you know, but not worthless. And you could take that away. And he's gotten even better. He's a better Jedi. He's a better teacher. He's a better everything.
He's a better man.
He's just. Yeah, and he's just ready to you know, make the big decisions. It's like risk is a part of the game, Matt. You want to sit in that chair? Let me guess, Tuesday. Anyway, no more cross-franchising. The battle continues, and Tiber Saxon, the new Imperial governor, is contacted. He is voiced by Tobias Menzies. Now, I said, it's funny, I just said no more cross-franchising. Because I'm totally going to do it.
Yourself.
This is, well, I mean, this is another huge casting moment for Rebels. Menzies is, he's very, very prolific. He's been in a lot of films and shows, including, yeah. but not limited to, Casino Royale, which he has a small part there. I only mentioned it because I had it on last night and I forgot how good that movie is. Mm-hmm. But he has a huge role in genre audiences will probably most likely know him best from Outlander, where he plays mm-hmm. Black Jack Randall, one of the most villainous villains I've ever seen in anything.
Oh yeah, he's the worst.
You talk about villains, it's like he is just, and you hate him.
Yeah.
And it's just, and that's, but, and Menzies himself is so lovable and wonderful. It's
and he's
like,
playing two, and he's playing two different roles in that show too.
Yeah, it's true. It's
that's
like,
right.
And they're so different. And then you really like the one guy, but the other, it's just, oh, you think you've seen villains do some bad stuff. And then, Oh man, it's not, you don't even have to wait for it. It's right there in season one.
Yeah.
It's some of the stuff he pulls is just, oh Lord. But, and he's, the thing is he's not like that at all. So it's just, it's a really astonishing transformation. He also took over for Prince Philip from Matt Smith in season three of The Crown, but I first got to know and love Tobias Menzies when he played Marcus Junius Brutus in, that's right, Rome. This is Rome the Pod.
Now, are we shocked? Are we shocked?
Oh my God.
Absolutely not.
Bright Coliseums, and welcome to Roam the Pod. I am your host, Julius Gaius Silliman. Joining me are the greatest orators and praters in the forum. If you're going to cast a Mando traitor and you've been casting Rome actors as Mandos, you've already made that a thing, then who screams traitor more than the guy who played Marcus Junius Brutus? If anything,
I have to know the story behind this. There has to be a Rome fan in the casting office that's like, you know what? I'm just going to pick them all out here.
I mean, who is not a Rome fan? Who has seen it and not loved it, I ask you?
Yeah, I don't know.
So, yeah, Caitlin's giving me a side eye here, which just means, yeah, haven't seen it, have you?
Well, I haven't.
Guess what? It's like I magically like force you to sit in that chair and watch two seasons of Rome. It's like it would only take one and then you'd want to watch the rest. Anyway,
I'm sure it's great.
But if anything, Tiber Saxon is worse than Brutus because he's just a vicious opportunist and he doesn't have long soliloquies about honor, duty, and loving Caesar more or less than, but love Rome more, blah, blah, blah. He's just a flunky. But anyway, Tobias Menzies, our final Mando-Rome connection. So for Tiber Saxon being the new Imperial governor and more fantastic casting choices, canon, Roman fire! But before we leave Rome the Pod, who wants a fun aside?
Ooh. I mean, I always enjoy a fun aside.
This is on Rome the Pod, we call this a funny hot take happened on the way to the forum. Though this casting happened before she was ever on Rome, the brilliant Lindsay Duncan, who was a main cast member on Rome, who played Brutus's mother, actually, and pushed him. It's like, you know, why don't you kill Caesar? It's like, you're of the Junii. They'll accept it if you do it. And if you want to see someone perform a curse, oh my God. Anyway, this has nothing to do with Star Wars, but it does because she voiced Protocol Droid. Wait for it. She voiced Protocol Droid TC-14 in The Phantom Menace, the first Protocol Droid we see in that movie on the Trade Federation ship, the one who serves beverages.
The silver, The Solar Protocol.
Yeah, to Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan. And so if you go chronologically from episodes 1 to 9, she's the first protocol droid we ever see in Star Wars.
Wow.
But if you're not going that way, and if you're just popping on Phantom Menace, I remember the first time watching that, it's we were in this hangar with all these new battle droids and vulture droids, and it's like, oh, that's weird. But then we see her walk up, and it's a protocol droid of a classic design. It's like, oh, okay, it's still Star Wars, and we feel right at home. TC-14 at your service. So anyway, that's fun. So there's another connection.
Dear Lord.
Isn't that fun?
That is pretty good. I mean,
that's fun.
You know,
anyway,
fun.
This has been Rome the Pod. Feel free, take it Caesar-y, and remember, all right, that's it. Anyway. back to Star Wars.
Yeah. Now that is an exit.
We're like not even 10 minutes into this episode.
Yeah.
All right. Just, you know, it was totally worth it. And if I had to do it all over again, I would.
I'm proud of you.
If I had to do it again, I would do it again.
I'm proud of you.
You did it for the glory of Rome.
I don't think you are proud of me. I think that was sarcastic.
I think we need to continue.
No, I think we need to move on because I think we've had one digression too many. So let's get on track, everybody. Come on. Clan Ren is over. Clan Ren is overpowered, and it looks like the day is lost. But worry not. In swoops some Mandos in blue armor, and Rao says that they are Clan Krees. With their help, they overcome the enemy and get into the prison, and they find it empty, and that it was a trap, as Fen Rao and Kanan had considered. They'd thought that it might be, and it was. Rao then introduces Sabine to the leader of Clan Krees. We know her well at this point. Welcome back, Bo-Katan Krees. Played, as always, by genre legend Katie Sackhoff. What do you hear, Starbuck? Have to do it. I'm just going to do that every time.
Nothing but the rain.
Grab your gun. Bring in the cat. Love to see her. It's like, I know her. That can't be. She's that redhead Mando who shot at me. But here she is. She's seen by many as the rightful leader of Mandalore, and we find out a little between the series history that we find out that the Jedi made her regent of the planet towards the end of the Clone Wars. It must have been like their second to last decision.
Right. She was the regent for like maybe 15 minutes.
Yeah, you're going to be regent of Mandalore. We're going to go and arrest the Chancellor.
Yeah.
And that's like, those are their last two choices. And yeah, and then Order 66 happens. So she tells Ezra that following that, she refused, the Empire did, you know, try to keep her on. It's like, okay, change of leadership. You want to keep this job, you're going to do what the Emperor tells you. And she said, hell no. So Clan Saxon betrayed her and took her power. So Saxon's still around, still flunking, being a flunk. Sabine offers her, Bo-Katan sees her kind of as the rightful leader, as many other people do. So she offers her the Darksaber right here. And Bo-Katan does not accept it. She says that she is not her sister. And this was, I have to say, this was a mind blown. Having Bo-Katan back and having references back to Duchess Satine and all of the Mando history that we saw in the Clone Wars, I didn't think we'd ever get follow through on this. Did you, Matt?
No, I mean, not in this show. I mean, at least like I had no expectations that this was the time frame in the story we're going to return to.
Yeah, I was just so happy to see Bo-Katan back at all. But also that they're following up with just almost a sequel to, you know, some of my our favorite arcs in Clone Wars. Some of our favorite arcs.
Well, and obviously Filoni's because, you know, he's not done with this story.
I think it's safe to say that Filoni might have a Mando thing.
I think he's got a thing on Mandos.
Do you think Dave Filoni has a Mando thing?
I think it's safe to assume.
He's like, Mando.
No, leave the helmet on.
Yeah, he's like, it's like no, leave it on. It's better when it's on.
Don't ever take it off.
Okay, what are you, Spader and Secretary? What's going on here? It's interesting that at no point does Sabine ever show signs of wanting this power for herself, which I thought was interesting. It's at least at the time when this came out, I thought, oh, we're leading to Sabine ruling Mandalore. And that's just, it kind of leads you that way because Bo-Katan keeps saying no, and they're saying they're impressed with Sabine. But in no way does Sabine ever show that she wants to be the one to wield it. She's always saying, I'm just keeping it for now, and I'm going to find the person to wield it. And that's really kind of selfless of her. It's like that has wants no part of that power herself. And I think we'll find out why. I think her past that we that is uncovered here kind of plays into that. But also that she has, that's just not her life anymore.
Absolutely.
Is fascinating to me. Who among us would make the same decision if Matt Romano, if I offered you the Darksaber and said, here, it's like you rule Mandalore now. Would you just take it? Or would you say, no, I'll take it, but I'll find someone better?
I would take it. I would be, this is the Captain Matt Romano Memorial Mando Highway. This is where my statue of myself holding the Darksaber will be going.
Man,
I will be a fantastic leader.
I
merciful.
Should have known. I yeah. should have known it would go that way. For a second, I was hoping that it would.
I will be a fantastic Kate, leader.
I would fantastic. Be a fantastic leader. Okay, yeah, that's
merciful.
Well. Okay.
Love and, the people.
Okay, sir. Yeah. Okay, excuse
me.
We're going to take
me.
That. We're going to take that back
me,
now.
Caitlin, they love
a
me.
Wonderful reign, and not short enough it was. Caitlin Bush, I say, here's the Darksaber. Do you want to rule or give it to someone else? What would you make? What choice would you make?
I mean, I'd like to think that I'd be intelligent enough to know that I'm probably not the person to be running a planet.
Yeah.
You'd be better than either of us.
But yeah. I mean, I've never been offered that kind of power before. I don't know what I'd do with it. I would hope that
I'm offering
I'd be
it to you.
Like,
I'm offering it to you now. This is the moment.
The thing that sucks is that, like, the combat by death thing, you know, yeah. I'd like to take it if I didn't have to fight anybody, you know, maybe
right.
a term limit.
If everyone
three
would
years.
Just assume three years. That I was really yeah. badass and not actually yeah. challenge me, that'd be really dope.
Right.
Well, Matt, the way you just started your 5-second rule, you're going to be challenged all immediately.
Well, exactly. Like, I thought about it. I took a beat. I thought about it.
Caitlin
and...
would probably be benevolent and would be yeah. like, so I don't think she'd have to, you know, battle
yeah.
to the death.
Yeah, that's,
maybe
that's
there's a
very fair.
Substitute trial by combat thing going on. I
yeah,
don't know.
Something. Yep.
Okay, that bit's over. Ursa and Tristan Wren arrive, and they say that Sabine's father is being transported to Sundari to be executed. So off they go, and we have a classic Lucasfilm convoy attack scene. And so many memories of both Raiders and definitely Last Crusade in this scene.
Yeah.
You get that, Matt?
I did
from
get
this.
That.
Yeah, it's anything with it's like a convoy, and then it's out of control and
a
they
chasing
start going
down
over
of
a cliff.
Said convoy.
Yeah. Exactly. The minute they also start going over the cliff, I'm like, okay, this is total Last Crusade with these, yeah. with the, yep. the toy yep. figure, action figure troop transports. Before this though, Kanan has a little holocall with Hera and she wants them back sooner rather than later. It was hard for her to persuade Mon Mothma to let Kanan, Ezra and Chopper go in the first place. And Kanan tells her that Sabine's father is important to the Mandos and that doing this is important. It's all part of the promise they made. But she tells him that the Spectres, meaning him and Ezra, are important to the Alliance. And he questions being called an asset, quote unquote, and then asks Hera how she feels personally about him being gone. And Hera's talking about the mission, and Kanan's gone into the relationship territory. So it's like,
do you just love this scene so much, Brian?
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, because this is and Hera then asks him to stay safe. And this is increased focus on Kanera shipping for the rest of the season.
This is the most, like, blatant, I think, flirting that the two of them ever done. Like, there's been flirting before this, but this is the most, like, blatant, like, acknowledgement of, like, romantic interest here.
Absolutely.
We've been
waiting for it and didn't think that we'd get it. And it's one of those scenes that, and I know you like these scenes too, Caitlin. It's akin to, two people are looking at a beautiful sunset. And the girl in front says, oh, it's so beautiful. And the man behind her is not looking at the sunset. He's looking at her and says, yes. Yes, it is.
Yes, it is.
But this, and so this
love
is, it's like, it's like, I want you back because you're important to the Alliance. It's like, but I'm also important to you, aren't I? Yes, but you know, as a friend, we're comrades. It's like, we're more than that, Hera, aren't we? It's like, Donna's calling me. I gotta go. Shh. So this is increased Hera Kanera shipping happens here, and this will continue for the rest of season four. This is now, you know, we knew going into this would be the last season. And so I like that they didn't make us wait for it. For Kanan loves Hera and Hera loves Kanan, but she's being selfless and still puts the mission first at the cost of her own feelings, which are huge. Come on, they are so in love. Kanan, fire! And for more on Kinnera and everything else, it's, you know, does Hera wish she's still putting the mission first? Does she really wish that she just, you know, give in and tell Kanan how she really feels? Yes, she does. And we know that thanks to our friend Vanessa Marshall. The attack on the convoy commences, and it's another great scene of Mando Jedi action going every which way. Never get tired of it. Sabine uses a paint bomb, and Ezra and Kanan are slicing things every which way. Eventually, Ezra frees Ulrich and gives him his jetpack, saying he's better off without it, and he's not wrong. We've now got a serious Last Crusade tank off the cliff moment, but it's three of these Imperial transports going off, and then there's a great Ezra moment of him climbing up the fallen tanks one by one to get to the top, where Sabine finally helps him get to safety. And it's a little, it's definitely reminiscent of Last Crusade, but also of season one, Liberty on Ryloth, when Mace is falling into the thing and Force jumps up the falling Separatist tank. It's a little similar to that. A little, but, you know, not exactly the same. Anyway, Sabine and Ulrich immediately start talking about art, and he's like, yeah, thanks for saving me, but oh, look at your armor. It's like, look at the colors. Oh, wow. When did you go into the, when did you go into cubism? Ursa and Tristan, who were leading another battle, come to say that they'll have two victories today, but the imps start sending reinforcements over to them. Why send reinforcements if the battle is lost? It's just a single walker of a design they don't recognize. Weird. And then the comm goes out, not good. Our heroes see a distant explosion, and Sabine, horrified, jumps on a speeder and gets over there right quick. They're on the scene, and all they see are disintegrated bodies and severely damaged Clan Ren armor. Ulrich says that a specific weapon did this, one designed by Sabine.
Dun,
end
dun,
of part
dun.
One. And I thought, when I watched part one, I was like, oh my god, they killed Ursa and Tristan. Like, I thought
they
were dead.
I definitely thought they went there.
Because the animation here, it's really gorgeous with the armor crumbling in her. It's either here or the beginning of part two with the armor crumbling in her hand. You can't even pick it up.
It's part A New Hope, Luke finding Bru, her smoking body, and part Infinity War, like the ashes floating off into the...
Now who's cross-franchising?
That's a good one.
This one part of Rome. That's right. Welcome back to... No, just kidding. Sorry. Part two. Right back where we were. Sabine is beside herself, thinking that her mother and brother are dead, and it's her fault, as armor crumbles away in her fingers, as we already said. But they aren't dead. They are not dead. Ursa and Tristan took damage, but they pop up. They survived. More troops arrive, so they all get away thanks to Clan Kreese and a gauntlet fighter. The pursuit continues, and their weapons are knocked out. Ezra says to Bo-Katan, they have no weapons. And then Bo-Katan gives him such a badass line and says, a Mandalorian with a jetpack is a weapon.
Yeah,
and then
man.
Just jumps right out of the ship. And I'm like, that's why you're Bo-Katan and I'm not. That's why you're Starbuck. That's why you're the boss. Oh my God, love it. And the thing is, a Mandalorian with a jetpack, it's also a hindrance, because how many times have we seen Jedi just slash a jetpack with their lightsaber and that Mando's done?
Right.
You know, that happens all the time. Take out the jetpack and Boba dies because of his jetpack. Jango loses it in the Kamino fight right quick. You see it in Clone Wars all the time with slashing it or blowing the jetpack and they go down. So know how to use it. You know, no one's slashing Bo-Katan's jetpack. It happened in the Gar Saxon fight. You know, it takes it out, but it's, you know, whittling down the amount of little tricks and weapons they have. And what are you without your tricks? Are you anything? Here's hoping you are. She jumps right out of the ship, and then she takes out pursuing TIEs. And once again, there's more Ezra jetpack tomfoolery. In case you thought it was just a part one thing, we get more in part two.
He still sucks at it.
Yeah, it's like, and again, I'm like, good. It's good,
good
that
yeah,
he,
you
he's
can't
not
be good
learning.
At everything.
He's not learning, and he doesn't learn.
Yeah,
Tiber Saxon has a little holo call with Thrawn about the test of the weapon, which they're calling the Duchess, which is so rude. What this weapon does is directly target the Beskar alloy that the Mando armor is made of, and it makes their strength a weakness. Beskar being brought in here was big at the time and still is. It was kind of a recanonizing moment of Beskar, because that was a thing with older Mandalorian stories that were no longer canon, and then canon again. Anyway, it was just bringing it up again was a big thing.
And now it's even more of a big thing thanks to Mandalorian. Obvious,
yeah, we're setting up things for Mandalorian and how this whole episode sets up all of the Mandalorian. This is, you know, knowing that Beskar here is Fetch, it's definitely happening. So for Beskar, cannon, fire. It's a big deal. The Beskar after so much disarray.
The Beskar on the baby.
Yeah, he's got the Beskar. The baby, .. coming soon. Anyway, Thrawn mentions Gar Saxon and asks what he'd think of this weapon, and Tiber says Gar would say that Mandalore has to adapt to survive. Like you know what Titus Pula would have to say about the Duchess. Anyway, this weapon does not have very good range, which Tiber was hoping Thrawn didn't notice, but of course Thrawn did. Using Tiber's art and his artistic sketches, he was able to notice that the weapon doesn't have good... That's not true.
But
can you imagine? It's like, I've been analyzing your sketches and I know your weapon does not have very good range, Tiber Saxon. Anyway, that's not true. He just knows.
You've been working on that.
But this... I haven't, but is it better? Is it better?
It's getting better. Getting a little better. Yeah.
This is the I'm going to use the C word. The content that all you listeners are here for, I'm sure. Synergy. They need to fix this aspect of the weapon. They need to get it some range. They need to get it the range of, say, Tobias Menzies. So to do that, they need the one who designed it. Caitlin Bush is on the show. Not right. That's not actually not true. They need Sabine Wren, who created the Duchess. They need her to fix it. Saxon orders his lead flunky, Captain Hark, to go and find her. Cut to, our heroes are having it out. Sabine tells them that they know that she created this thing, and she says she destroyed it, but she did not erase the record, so they were able to build a new one. Bo-Katan is pissed that she creates such a cowardly abomination of a weapon. This is everything a Mando should not be. This is not how Mandos fight. And Sabine admits that at the time, she was arrogant and wanted a challenge. And she opens says, well, it seemed like a good idea at the time. It's like, I'm not doing it now. Like, I didn't do this yesterday.
I think it was like this combined with the fact that she named it the Duchess. And I think Sabine's line is, it was a bunch of bad decisions.
Yeah, that's true. Cause we also hear
it's like,
it was
a stream of bad decisions.
Bo-Katan is pissed. It's like, and you named it after my dead sister? And the thing's like, look.
Like, mistakes were made.
A lot of issues. I was having, it was not my best day. I'm not going to say it was a great day. Mistakes, I think all around. Mistakes from the room. Were some of them mine? Yes. But she really takes it all. And she really, I feel for her because this is not her anymore. But it's her, this two-parter is Sabine's amends.
Yeah.
Coming to grips with her, not only coming to grips with her past, but also, making up for it and taking, you know, enough positive action to take care of the wrongs that she's done.
I think that's a great message too. You know, you can royally screw up, like make all of the bad decisions that you could possibly make. And you can still do the most that you can to make up for it, to make amends, to better yourself and be a better person.
Yeah. And that's very Star Wars, isn't it? Redemption. Yeah. I mean, it's huge in Star Wars.
It's a big theme, yeah.
You could say it's a big theme, you know, with, you know, the whole arc of Darth Vader, Kylo Ren, Ben Solo, Anakin. You know, it's in any number of characters. And also, you know, sacrifice, because it takes, as I always, is my constant harping thing, it takes that where, you know, she's in multiple points willing to sacrifice herself to make this right. And she's a very selfless person. And selfless character, and I think that's great. It's nice seeing this on not such a grand scale, on not like a mythical Jedi Sith scale. So we're seeing it, you know, a little smaller, but it's nice. Anyway, Sabine admits, she was arrogant and everything that we just said. Ezra, being dumb, asks, well, why not just make your armor out of something else? Cut to every Mando in the room just giving him a look of sensors at the ready. What the f***? they just look at him like he has like eight heads and just started doing a Gallagher routine. It's like, what is
Gallagher?
It's like he just said, hey, let's sit this battle out and make a house out of popsicle sticks. It's like, what a stupid thing to say. What a stupid thing to say, you stupid kid. Because for them, it's their armor is their legacy. It's he doesn't get it. Sabine makes it clear. She says her armor alone was forged 500 years ago and carries the history of all who wore it previously. Its legacy, its history, and its protection. So shut up, Ezra. Sabine reasons with them. They can keep piling on her or they can all go and destroy this thing for good. So they opt to do the latter thing. It has to be destroyed. One team has to go and destroy it, and another team has to erase all the records of it so they can't build another one. Rao and Bo-Katan have a little aside then about Sabine's potential. We know Rao is and has been impressed and with Sabine and everything else. Bo-Katan, yeah, she's pissed and was just railing on her, but she's impressed too. Beskar targeting super weapon creation aside, she's impressed with Sabine.
Yeah.
So now we get to the mission. Bo-Katan slips in that she does not like how the way, this is where she slips in how she, by the way, I really don't like that you named it that. Kanan, Ezra, and Chopper, that team starts to erase the data. Saxon gets the drop on Sabine and Bo-Katan. Hark is protesting now. He's saying that the Empire could use, what if the Empire decides to use this weapon on all Mandalorians, which is something they would totally do and probably exactly what they're planning.
Yep.
Saxon then puts him in his place, and Saxon says he says I am the Empire. I'm like, you're really not. And
honey,
my only note here is, all right, that's calm it down, Tiber Saxon.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And I think his whole thing is like line. we they wouldn't do that to us because we just show them like unending loyalty. It's like,
yeah.
You should kind of look at the track record. I don't think that's actually going to do anything to save you, my dude.
Yeah, it's also like, you're not Palpatine. You can't say, I am the Senate. It's like, I am the Empire. It's like, you're not. It's like, you have no idea. It's like, have you seen the other movies? You obviously have not seen all the other movies. Let's go to the tape. Yeah, exactly. And it's like, also, it's like, you're not in the original series last time I looked, Tiber Saxon, so you're probably not even going to survive this episode.
Yeah.
Saxon is torturing Sabine and Bo-Katan now, and now Hark, along with them, using the Duchess, demanding that Sabine help fix it. It's enough to hurt them, but not enough to kill them. She says that she will fix it, so she goes and makes a little adjustment. Wink. Saxon turns it back on, happy as hell, and wouldn't you know it, it shocks him, as well as all the other Imperial idiots wearing Imperial armor. It's not enough to kill them again, just make them hurt. It then takes down every Imperial in range on Saxon's docked Star Destroyer, so Sabine just changed it to target Stormtrooper armor instead of Mandalorian armor. Ezra even has to fling off. He's been wearing his painted Scout Trooper helmet for this two-parter. He actually has to fling it off. I like that they added that little detail.
It's right.
The thing when things magnetize and Anakin goes flying because of his hand. It's like you forget about these things until they call it out like that. And so I love those details. Famous character. Sabetti pops up. She says, hey guys. No. Sabine is ready to use the weapon to kill Tiber Saxon, but Bo-Katan stops her. She says doing that would make her like them, cowardly. Sabine is better than that. She can fight with honor like a true Mando. And I wrote here, and this is a theme that came up in something else I was watching this past week, but it's applicable here. It's you're in trouble when you use the same tactics that your enemies are using.
Yeah.
It's anytime you're using the same methods, you're on a dangerous road. Don't you guys think?
I think so.
Yeah.
That's the first, it's the first step to like becoming the bad guy, you know?
Yeah, it's like, what if the rebellion was saying, it's like, okay, how are we going to counteract the Empire? Let's build a giant Death Star and just go and blow up Coruscant. Right. It's like,
well, it's the fear leads to anger, anger leads to hate, hate leads to suffering mentality.
And it's harder, you know, it's easy. It's a hard decision when Mon Mothma eventually says after they finally defeat the Empire, they think for good. She says now it's time to de-escalate all of the military.
Yeah.
And she gets questioned on that. It says because we can't become them. We can't make the same mistakes. The problem is there's only one Mon Mothma. There's only one Leia Organa and they're not around forever. Anyway, this was a huge theme in another show, and we're not going to cross franchise again, that I'm watching at the moment. And they did this hit the same beat in a completely different way, but it made me think of it. Sabine shuts the weapon down and Hark runs off. She slashes the machine to death with the Darksaber, which is such appropriate symbolism. And she's, well, it's the second time in Star Wars a Duchess has been killed with the Darksaber. Yeah, that was dark. Wow. That's not even in my notes. I just came up with that.
Oof, jeez.
Too soon?
Too soon.
Metaphorically, too soon. And the teams all get the hell out of there before the whole ship blows. Tiber Saxon blows up with it, so he was dead anyways.
Yeah.
It doesn't really matter. It's like, no, don't kill him. It will be as bad as them. Just leave him here and he'll blow up.
You're right.
Right.
So for the death of Tiber Saxon, and hopefully thus perishes, the last living member of the Saxon family is cannon fire. Back with Clan Kreese, if we thought everyone was going to rise up and make Sabine their leader, not so much. Sabine tells Bo-Katan that she's more than proven that she's the true leader of Mandalore, which I would agree with. More warriors arrive from all clans and houses, from Clan Kreese, but also Vizsla, Eldar, and Rook. Not related to Rook caste, as far as I can tell, though I looked that up because I questioned that. Rao now also represents all that's left of the Protectors, so he speaks for them. And they've got so many armor colors and everything here, and there's helmets off every which way. And I'm like, you're breaking that rule. if that rule's a thing, it's like, I guess it's not. They all pledge to support Bo-Katan, with Ursa and Clan Ren joining them into the mix. And Bo-Katan finally accepts the Darksaber. She sparks it up.
I accept this sword for my sister, for my clan, and for all of Mandalore.
And that's the end. So for United Mando Houses and Bo-Katan accepting the Darksaber, cannon fire! This is pretty much the last little bit of Mando history that we get before beginning The Mandalorian.
Oh, Mandalorian.
So a few things theoretically happen after this and before Mando starts.
Yeah.
We imagine Bo-Katan and the Mando loyalists are fighting a rebellion, continue to fight a rebellion, because this is just, they just took out Tiber Saxon. They didn't get rid of the Empire completely. Whatever the Great Purge is, theoretically takes place after this. We still don't really know what that is. Some or all of the clans adopt a helmets all the time policy, if that wasn't already a thing, for just if that it's brought up before, is that certain clans could be doing it now for all we know. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, what's the deal with that? When did that start? The notion of foundlings was likely a thing already, just not mentioned here, because if Din Djarin became one during the Clone Wars, taken in by members of Death Watch, maybe that notion went dormant and was later brought back after Mandalore was fully free and the Empire went down. We don't know. Who's to say what were practices before this period that came back? What were new? What were maybe instances of Mando culture being so big that different clans just have different rules that we don't know? Who knows? So those are the things that are up in the air. In terms of Mando and prepping, you know, for not just prepping for Mandalorian season two, but everything, I mean, this episode is pivotal. I'd say it's one of the most essential animated series things flat out. It's the minute the Darksaber happened, and we've talked about this before. It's people are like, what's that? It's like, well, you got to, you know, and people saying, what's the Great Purge? When did that happen? So, well, in Heroes of Mandalore, where he says, we don't know what happened. So we have no idea what happened after that. So this is, it's nice going through this episode and giving it some space, because going back to it, this is where we left off. And who knows what happened. There's a lot of pretty much the whole time period of the original trilogy and the 5 years after that.
Yeah.
A lot of things. Who knows what could happen? Anyway, thoughts, Caitlin and Bush, on these two episodes. Thoughts, hot takes, mind blowns, anything.
It was great. I love Sabine so much. I would hurt a lot of people for her. She is a fantastic character in Star Wars, and a fantastic female character in Star Wars in particular. Always on the lookout for more female characters that can kind of represent so much. And there's so much pressure, I think, on female characters in Star Wars. But this is very much as we've talked about, like a very complex, she's allowed to have all of these different ranges of emotions, to make mistakes and to come back for them, to have these same kinds of faults and issues that we see kind of the quote-unquote heroes of Star Wars normally having. So all of these redemption arcs that we've seen with Anakin, that we've now seen with Kylo Ren, and for Sabine to have that in such a short period of time, too. Because, like, all of this takes, like, our knowledge of this up till her quote-unquote redemption kind of happens within a very short period of time. And it's very refreshing to see something like that. And I will say it was the image of Bo-Katan lifting the Darksaber above her head at the very end of the episode that made me think of the Moff Gideon potentially being Mandalorian thing.
Yeah.
Ah, nice. Yeah.
It's true. You're so on the mark with what you said about Sabine, because it's clear that she's been sitting. This is the stuff she's been sitting with for the whole series. Since we first met her, she knew that she did all this. And we just parsed it out little by little. It's like, oh, I did bad things. It's like, well, what? And this is finally, you know, all of her theoretical dirty deeds are uncovered. Mm-hmm. And this is not just because we recently interviewed her, but I have to say that Tia Sarkar's performance continues to be incredible in this episode. And just how she goes from grief to remorse to redemption is not in the span of a very short amount of time is not easy, and she really does it well. And thinking back to season one, where Tia herself said that Sabine was the least fleshed out character in the bunch, cutting to this where it's one of the most fleshed out, and just such a complete, and her arc is not done because we have all of season four, but this is Sabine dealing with the past, and now her past is finally at rest, and everything that comes after this is, well, now where do we go from here? Right. What's the future? How are we've dealt with the past, we've made amends, and now it's one day at a time onward, because I've still got my new rebel family, and we've got, you know, a little thing called the Galactic Civil War to fight. And so I don't need to lead over there. I'm done with, you know, you got to leave home at some point. I've put my demons to rest. It's time, you know, to move on and see what else is out there. Matt Romano, thoughts on this episode, either at the time or on rewatch, or generally anything from your delicious mind?
Oh, my delicious mind. But yeah, it's so good. It's delicious. You guys said it all, honestly. I mean, I think it's so funny watching this episode, looking back to when we first met her in the first episode and my first impressions of the character. And it was,
it was studio notes, the character.
Yeah, exactly.
It wasn't, yes. But it kind of felt like that's what, you know, at the time, that. What do you like, Mando skateboards? Yeah. And it's like, what color's your hair going to be this week? And this is anything but that. You know, this is like serious character of depth.
Yeah. So it's just amazing to see this character come so far. And honestly, you know, outside of Chopper, maybe my favorite character in the series in terms of like maybe not the favorite character, but a great character.
That's a loaded. It's hard.
It's hard. Yeah, it's a lot of characters. I start thinking about everybody. It's like I can't say.
Yeah,
that, so.
It's like because it's like every moment. It's like they're kind of all. It's
they all
impossible.
Have these amazing moments. Yeah.
And the funny thing that you did is something I always do. It's like, well, Chopper aside, you always have to give that parenthetical because it's like because then he'd always win. But it's like
exactly.
But,
yeah.
But
yeah.
Excluding Chopper because like I'd also it's hard. I'd say sometimes it's Fenn Rao. I mean sometimes it's you know it's. Even though it's a minor character, but in terms of our specters, you know, the main family, it's impossible because sometimes it's Zeb, a lot of times it's Hera. An episode like this, I'm like Sabine for life. So
right, exactly.
It's tough. And then eventually Ezra, you know, grows on you to the point where you're like, okay.
Yeah, okay,
Ezra. We'll it's like, we will accept you now. street rat, loath cat.
But man, at the end of this episode, so excited for like the stuff we don't know about Mandalorian culture that you were going through before. It's like there's so much stuff for the Mandalorian to pick up now and flesh out. And I'm very excited story goes.
And we will move on after this because we have to. But it's do you guys think there's any way that the Great Purge has somehow happened before this and we just never heard about it?
No,
I mean, if it's not explicitly said already in canon, then I would assume that we're just maybe get a flashback in Mandalorian that explains it because there's something happened.
We're missing a very large puzzle piece.
Yeah, it's between this and that. they talk about things and things are different. And it's like, there's things we don't know. And if it was anyone else than Dave Filoni at the helm, I'd say, well, they're just sticking that in and playing fast and loose and ignoring stuff. But Dave Filoni is not that guy. He's not that guy. I mean, he's got, you know, didn't direct or write this, but he's obviously overseeing all of this. And he's, you know, as we just said, front and center on Mandalorian. So if anyone knows what the Mandalorian timeline is, it's going to be him. Right. So with him calling the shots, I'd say there's a bigger plan in place and we're just going to get to sit back and enjoy it. Right.
Yeah, we have to.
Yeah.
Yeah. That sounds good.
I mean, I don't want to. No pressure, Dave.
No pressure, Dave.
But we love you and you're the chosen one. And if you let us down, I'm just going to throw myself out the window. I mean,
no pressure.
I live on the second floor and there's no bush. It's just pavement. So that'll be on you, Mr. Filoni. That'll be on you.
That is very dark.
That will be on you, sir. Okay. I got to add, just for these episodes, just a mind blown in general, because I never thought we'd get this much action on Rebels until I saw the title Heroes of Mandalore in the thing. I was like, oh, I guess it's a Mando. We're opening the season with a huge Mando two-parter. And then we're going to move on to more... The Rebellion. Hope you like Saw Gerrera, Mon Mothma, Yavin 4, and all that stuff, because next week we'll continue with Season 4 of Star Wars Rebels.
You're rebels, aren't you?
Discussing the episodes In the Name of the Rebellion, Parts 1 and 2, up through and including the brilliantly named episode Rebel Assault. I love that they named it after the game. I'm just, I don't know if they, that had to be on purpose. We'll get into that next week. But with that, we're going to go to a break. But we're fine. Everything's fine here now. Thank you. How are you? Don't turn us off.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
We're back, and now it's time to take a look at some galactic points of interest.
Good news has come to the citizens of Lothal.
We're going
to
begin with merchandising.
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 Merchandising. Merchandising.
Some Galaxy's Edge merchandise that I think we've talked about before. It's here. It's now available at Target stores and some on the Target website. Some of it you can order on the Target site, and some of it you have to go physically to the store. And some of it's like, well, the store near you doesn't have it, but this other one does. I'm like, what are you? It's like, okay, I guess I don't need this Hondo Black Series like I thought I did.
yes, you
nothing
do.
Too crazy, but there's, I do. Who am I kidding? There's nothing too crazy, but there is some fun stuff. And it is stuff that normally they don't sell outside of Galaxy's Edge, but it's nothing like the Holocron or Kyber crystals or, you know, one of Savvy's original lightsabers, nothing like that. Although there is going to be a thing in some of the stores where you can do that. I'm not sure. But things like the special Lego set for Rise of the Resistance, and that has a Vi Moratti minifig in it. I was like, wow, this is a character from a book is now a Lego minifig. I'm like, that's amazing. It's like, I hope Delilah S. Dawson gets that set and gets a Vi Moratti minifig. Also, we didn't say this to Vanessa Marshall, but if I'm assuming she's been to Galaxy's Edge at least once. And if she hasn't, somebody get her a Calicori. If somebody hasn't bought Marshall a Hera Calicori, it's like,
right.
Then shame on you. And I guess I'll have to do it myself.
I was going to say, you should.
Anyway. Yeah, it's like, oh, well, because you can always have two. It's like,
yeah.
If she already has one, it's like, oh, now you have two. So anyway, nothing too crazy, but they, like I already said, a really nice Hondo Black Series, the DJ Rex droid that we saw as the shuttle pilot that's now the DJ in Olga's Cantina. There's a Black Series figure of him. A lot of fun stuff. If you feel like putting on a mask and braving a trip to Target, go ahead. Also, non-Target related merchandise, a bunch of a whole lot of new Black Series figures were recently released. There was a whole, this is part of the a big release that included, Matt, we already talked about it, the Lego Razor Crest.
Yeah.
Was part of this, but a whole big bunch of new Black Series figures were released, including beautiful versions of all of the heroes from Rebels, which had not been available yet. So they look beautiful. There's also a new Ahsoka in the mix. Oh, just a really good looking figures all around. Just don't try and stand them up because these figures just don't stand up. Speaking of Ahsoka and speaking of Galaxy's Edge, either soon or right now, I'm not sure, but at Doc Ondar's, that's where you can get the Legacy lightsabers, they already, you could get Ahsoka's white lightsabers. Shout out to our colleague Ben Fallon, who had a friend go, at, or a family member go, and buy them and send them to him. And I remember going to the office, and he's like, come here. He was so excited, and he opened the thing, and he showed me the white lightsabers. I was like, oh my God, I lost my mind. And he was like, yeah, he was so excited, I was so excited. And we were like a couple of girls at summer camp. anyway, so you could get those. But now, and I saw this because it was courtesy of Ashley Eckstein's Instagram, they are going, either they're available now, or they're going to be Ahsoka's classic Clone Wars lightsabers. The one big, the one small. And these are going to be the only ones that change color. They can change from green to blue. So depending on how sad you are and what area of the Clone Wars time period you're in, you can change the color. So they're likely very expensive, and nobody's going to Galaxy's Edge anytime soon, and nobody has any money to spend on them. But if you're going to Galaxy's Edge and have like a few hundred dollars to blow on some Ahsoka's lightsabers, check out Doc Ondar's.
Oh my God.
Go do it. There's no reason for me to even
Why not?
Have brought that up. But anyway, merchandising.
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 Kids love this one.
All right, page turners they are. Welcome to Brian's Book Club.
The Sacred Jedi Texts.
Oh. The selection this week is the second new Thrawn book from Timothy Zahn, Star Wars Thrawn Alliances. It follows up directly on the events of Star Wars Thrawn and features Palpatine putting Thrawn on a mission with Vader. He's pulling a Hera and putting them on a wild Meylu Run chase. So they're getting to know each other. Part of this takes place on Batuu, which is fun. It's Batuu in the pre-original trilogy era, so it's a little different than the park is. But not only do you get some great further insight into Thrawn, you get some incredible insight into Vader. And we've talked about this before, how Vader thinks of himself as opposed to Anakin, and how they're two separate people. Especially in this time period. And in this book, he does talk about Anakin, but he never says the name. When invaders thought in his own thoughts were in his head sometimes, he just refers to him as the Jedi or that Jedi. And it's chilling every time you read it. And it's like, well, does Thrawn know who he really is? Does he not? Because Thrawn's a smart guy and has probably looked at Vader's oil paintings and analyzed it, knows everything. Anyway, really good stuff all around. If you want to continue your Thrawn reading journey, a page turner, this is.
Dear Mr. Dashwood, enclosed are the first few chapters of a piece I've only begun working on.
Now, better buckle up, baby. It's Captain's Corner.
I haven't had my muffin yet, Matt.
Hey, everybody. Can't scream today because the Force-sensitive child is sleeping in that little closet off to my left. If you look to your left, it's a closet with my Force-sensitive child in it. And I can't scream. Today is
you probably just ruined Savannah's week.
No, Savannah's just happy to have the Captain's Corner back. Hey, everybody, yeah. Welcome to Captain's Corner. I just can't do the yell this morning, so I apologize. But you know what? Every once in a while, my father used to say, even the train stops. You know, so every once in a while, you know, we'll pull it back. But anyway,
yeah.
What sure. Is that?
Today's news.
So much to unpack there.
We got a What's lot news, of news Matt? Today. We got some news today. All right. So I really don't want to spend a lot of time talking about it, but, you know, I like to keep my finger on the pulse of the talk in the Star Wars fandom. And today, everybody
as opposed to Caitlin and myself.
Exactly, exactly. And today, you know, everybody can't get enough of this Jimmy Kimmel Live interview with Daisy Ridley that happened, I think, last night between Josh Gad filling in for Jimmy Kimmel, interviewing Daisy Ridley.
Oh, when the two of them get together, it's always fun.
It was super fun. Great interview. I encourage everybody to check it out. But I think the two like meatiest piece of news to come out of it is apparently Daisy Ridley didn't know she was going to be the granddaughter of Palpatine.
You're still saying Palpatine.
It comes out wrong every time.
It just happens.
It just happens because that's it.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Do I have to explain it again to you? You know.
No, it's your corner. It's your corner.
We've been over this.
So anyway, so that whole controversy is reignited online about, you know, the lineage of Rey and, you know,
oh, yes, let's go
that.
Back to
and the,
that's
and
please.
The Kenobi and the Kenobi and the blah, blah, blah.
Exactly.
Let's please know. Go back to that. Well,
so we're going to move on past that. But I just have
if I can poke in, though, and say that the best thing, the videos are still fun to watch of Josh Gad on the set of Murder of on the Orient Express trying to get info of
yes.
about Last Jedi
oh,
from
yeah.
Daisy and that he got Dame Judi Dench to say the word midichlorians in one of those videos is still like, that is one of the greatest.
I feel like that was made for you, Brian.
Oh, it yeah. was. It's like, it's the perfect thing. It's that bit will never be surpassed.
You and Josh Gad would get along. This. You guys would get along well.
I'm a fan. I was like, I think he's a talented guy. I think he's a nice guy. And I'm a fan of him. I look at him and I'm like, what's not to like? What's not to like here? I mean, come
exactly.
on. Anyway,
exactly.
I'm sorry. Continue.
Well, no, but I mean, the good part, maybe the nice thing to come out of the interview was that Daisy Ridley did say never, but to me, the Rise of Skywalker was tied off with a bow about returning to the role of Rey. But she said, never say never. So, you know, maybe she'll be back.
So maybe Lego Christmas special?
Lego Christmas special.
It's already, the description is so high on Rey being a character. It has to be her.
It has to be her. I hope it's her. Come on. If it's not, no offense to whatever actress they found to do the voice. Let's get Rey in there.
Yeah. Well, it's a shocker. It's Caitlin. So you just really pissed her off.
Oh, all right. Well, I take it back. Caitlin would be great in that role. Okay. And anyway, I'll close the corner out this week. I got to say, I lost a bet the other day and I have to. And part of the bet was announcing that I lost the bet in Captain's Corner.
What?
I have four very rambunctious nephews, huge Star Wars fans, huge fans of the pod. And we were all sitting around talking about General Grievous. You know, about the general, you know, the General Grievous segment. They got a kick out of it. Spawned off a conversation to how many lightsabers does General Grievous hold when he faces Kenobi in Revenge of the Sith? I said six. And it was four.
It's four.
What's wrong with you?
I don't know. You know, I think that's my whole Star Wars brain.
You believed in it so much that you bet on it?
I did. I lost $5.
How many nephews are we talking here?
Four nephews. $5, because only one nephew got the $5.
Yeah. I just say, I apologize. I identify. Do you see what I'm working with here?
You know, they all know.
Six lightsabers.
Yep. So Rudy, Aiden, Joey, Anthony, I apologize. You're right. Four lightsabers.
I apologize to you, too. Yeah. I apologize for bringing you content like this with a man who does no girl wants to marry a man who doesn't even know how many lightsabers General Grievous holds when fighting.
Well, my whole Star Wars brain is polluted because I immediately went to like, he has to have six. You know, we've seen him. We've seen it all. Like, he's got to have.
Where have we seen him have six?
Somebody's had six lightsabers at some point.
No, they haven't.
I empathize with this.
I'm going to find it for the next Captain's Corner.
You're empathizing because you don't want it to be a pile-on Matt moment, Caitlin. You know this is ridiculous.
Well, anyway, thanks so much for coming to Captain's Corner. That's it for the corner this week. We'll see you next time. That's what we got today.
Brilliant work, as always. Tip top. We got a top man on it. Now we'll turn it over to the Jedi Master for our next segment.
This is Obi-Wan Kenobi, and now it's time for Caitlin's Word of the Week.
The word of the week is jetpack.
Good job, Caitlin. She seems to be on top of things.
And here's where Matt says, ooh, that's the best one yet.
It is the best one yet. It's a good one. Jetpack is a good one. Yeah.
Thank you. I'm very proud of
that's going to take us into real talk.
I'm looking for a word
to having some real talk with some real folks.
I want to give a shout to longtime listener and Padawan Nikki, aka McClunky 2020, who sent some very funny Werner riffs to me and pointed out we had a talk that it was Werner's birthday recently, and they are happy that they share a birthday month with Werner. September, a fine month for birthdays. And it's also my parents' birthdays are in September. And one of my best friends.
My grandparents' birthdays are in September.
I mean, so September is just what a great month to be born.
Yesterday was my grandfather's 85th birthday.
Oh, wow. Big happy birthday to what's your grandfather's name, if you don't mind?
John.
John. John, a very happy birthday to you. A happy birthday to Werner. A preemptive happy birthday to McClunky 2020, a loyal listener to the show. Happy birthdays all around.
It's a family affair today.
It's a family affair.
It's always a family affair.
It's, you know,
it's about family, not just cars.
That's really what
family.
It is.
Yeah.
You know, here's the thing, Matt. Do you want another thing? Here's the thing about clones.
Yeah.
They attack.
It's about the Sith revenge.
Yeah. You forgot the most important thing about Mandalore. It's about the cones. And now my lowly Tiber Saxon. That's right, my lowly Tiber Saxon. Yeah. Okay, no, that's it. On Twitter, Case Odell had a question for us about twin sons. Basically, they're asking why Luke looks like a little kid in this episode when Emperor is yelling after him, when we've already met Leia and she's definitely not a little kid. And you're looking at the time period, it's like, yeah, Luke is not that little here. Both he and Leia are around the same pseudo age as Ezra a little bit also. And also he's literally the same age as Leia, and we already met her in Princess on Lothal. I don't really know the answer to this. I kind of remember this being brought up to either Filoni or Pablo Hidalgo in Rebels Recon. I don't remember what the answer is, and I was too lazy to look it up. I think it's either just a mistake or Obi-Wan was really far away and Luke was
just
running
really little
like a kid. It's like he's not that young. We know he's not, so just pretend he wasn't.
I'm going to go with it was a mistake.
Yeah, I said it's like, well, also maybe, you know, that was Obi-Wan watching, you know, it was a flashback of a few years before when he was looking at it. I don't know. Contrary to public opinion, I did not work on the show.
I
have yet to be involved in a Star Wars project on a professional level. Now, my rates are very reasonable and I am open and discussions are ongoing for me to star in some very exciting projects. One of them is Cassian Andor.
I've been in this fight since I was 6 years old.
You could do it all.
That's right. It's like it's going to be Cassian Andor, Mon Mothma, K2SO, and me.
And you.
Yeah, it's going to be really good. It's
as a
gonk
droid.
Not a droid. Just me. My face. My face is going to be seen.
Gonk droid. Yeah.
My face, beard, all of it, and the voice is going to be great. Now I shouldn't be talking about this because the deal has not closed, and I'm completely breaking an NDA, but I'm in it. It's great. I play I'm gonna be alongside Adria Arjona. It's really, we're all really happy here in my house by myself. All of that's a lie. This has gone completely off the rails. With that, we're gonna let Matt jump on board the Dooku to enjoy his 20-hour flight with Mbop, but join us next week where we'll continue season 4 of Star Wars Rebels.
You're Rebels, aren't you?
As I said, we'll be discussing the rest of the first half of season 4 in the name of the Rebellion up and through the brilliantly titled Rebel Assault. In the meantime, feel free to reach out to us on social media. If you so choose, Caitlin and Bush, you can be found where?
I can be found at Caitlin M. Bush. That is CAITLINM. Bush like the beer, not like the presidents.
And if you get a reply from her, you're really lucky these days. Matt Romano, you can be found where?
You can find me at Matt Romano on Twitter, MATTROMANO.
And sometimes you just gotta stop the train.
You know, sometimes the train stops.
That's not the same. And I can be found
even
on
the
Twitter
train
at Brian Silliman. That's at Brian, S as in Sky Guy, Illiman. The show must go on, please. This show never stops. To quote my
unlike the train.
Clay.
Unlike the trains.
That is a quote from a dear friend of mine. That's not original anyway. Stretch out with your feelings and share your thoughts. We love hearing from you. Subscribe, leave a comment, and give 5 stars if you're feeling generous. Snoke them if you got them. Take it, Chivi. And remember, hope is like the sun if you only believe in it when you can see it. You'll never make it through the night. This is the way we have spoken. The Force will be with you. Always. Be the spark.
Let's go to Baskervalia.